Aloha and welcome to Inspired Parent Summit 2. Mary Wheatley here, Inspired Parent Coach. Thank you all for joining me today. Inspired Parent Summit 2 was created for you, parents, educators, and caregivers, to find fresh and inspiring ways to address the overwhelming concerns and challenges of raising children in today's complex world. Today's interview welcomes holistic family sleep and wellness specialist Susie Sink. Susie offers integrative solutions to modern-day child and family sleep challenges and sees adequate, nourishing, and rejuvenating sleep for the entire family as paramount to a thriving, rewarding, interconnected life. She's passionate about helping parents transform their lives by teaching them simple and practical tools. Her personal experience as a mother inspires her to serve as a source of support for parents. She, like many mothers, has struggled with the kind of exhaustion and overwhelm that can lead to feelings of despair and hopelessness. She relishes using her expertise, intuition, and wisdom to deeply attune with her clients and to serve as a guide for their unique expression of love. Susie lives on the island of Kauai with her family and savors all of life's precious moments, watching her son grow, the sound of the rain, and perfectly ripe fruit. Susie and her services can be found through her website, susiesink.com. Welcome, Susie. I'm excited to learn about sleep solutions for families today, and I welcome you to Inspired Parent Summit 2.
Thank you so much for having me, Mary. I'm happy to be here with you today.
Yeah, so, you know, let's just jump right in and help us all to get to know you a little bit more. And maybe you could tell us about your background and what inspired you to pursue sleep and wellness as a profession.
I am happy to do that. Holistic wellness has been my lifelong passion. I have studied and practiced the healing arts for over 20 years. Out of college, I worked as an herbalist in an herbal pharmacy called Remedy in Athens, Georgia, and I also helped to open a yoga studio and wellness facility called the Healing Arts Center. Having the Healing Arts Center meant that I got to practice lots and lots of different modalities of yoga from different practitioners, and this allowed me to deepen my pursuit of whole body health. In my yoga practice, I studied optimal nutrition, mind-body connection, meditation, transpersonal psychology, and ancient wellness philosophy with many gifted master teachers. I also went on to study Chinese medicine and sound healing, and then worked for a number of years in Europe as a sound healer and used sound and colored light and acupuncture to help people with moving through things that were going on in their physical and emotional bodies. And despite all of this, my health, both physically and emotionally, crashed after the birth of my son 7 years ago. I had a stressful relationship, and my labor was long and difficult, and I had insomnia leading up to the birth. And in the days and weeks that followed, I became severely sleep-deprived. I also had developed pregnancy-induced thyroiditis, also known as Hashimoto's, and it was undiagnosed for months after the birth. I experienced severe migraine headaches and had postpartum depression, and that, coupled with a lack of sleep and lack of support, led me to a very scary place emotionally. I was so happy to be a mother, but I was also so, so exhausted. My son was not a great sleeper from the get-go, and I was committed to co-sleeping with him, but that meant that neither of us got very much sleep because we kept waking each other up. As it turns out, being a light sleeper seems to run in the family. So it took me years to recover, and part of my healing was working with multiple sleep consultants. When I finally got on the other side of this traumatic experience, I felt a really strong call to support other families so that they could hopefully avoid the struggle and the hardship that I had endured. So I went to school and I studied family sleep and infant mental health to become certified as a child and maternity sleep specialist, and I launched my practice. And I've been in practice as a sleep specialist for 3 years, and I've been pulling all of my experience in holistic health and wellness that I've been studying for the past 20 years into that practice.
Well, that's a beautiful story. And, you know, oftentimes I've interviewed people for this summit, my guests, and so many have been motivated and inspired through life experiences and oftentimes difficult life experiences. And I, you know, my audience has heard me say this before, how life is always our greatest teacher, and it invites us, you know, so that's a really beautiful, heartfelt story. So I want to thank you for sharing that with us. So, you know, let's talk about sleep and families, and what do you see pretty much regularly, I would imagine, as the top three sleep challenges for families in your practice?
Well, that depends on who in the family that we're talking about. A family is an interconnected and interdependent unit, and adequate sleep is absolutely essential for all the members of the family. And if sleep is off for one member, it's likely to be off for the entire family. For example, if we have a father who's not getting adequate sleep because he has a demanding job and he's stressed out, the stress that he's experiencing is likely to be felt by his wife and his children. Children are little sponges, and they feel everything that's going on in their environment, even if they don't have the language skills yet to articulate it. And so if a dad is stressed out, especially if that makes him less tolerant or less emotionally or physically available for his children, it can affect the children's sleep. They can become anxious. They can have trouble falling asleep. They can have trouble staying asleep. They can be waking too early. Also, a lot of times if a parent works a lot, I see in my practice that the other parent will allow the children to stay up late for the parents so that they can see them when they come home, but this creates all sorts of problems. So it's a cycle that feeds on itself, and it's really, really crucial for parents to be tuned into what's going on in the environment and how this affects the family in subtle ways. But getting back to your question, for parents, I think that the top three challenges are, number one, life stressors, whether it be work, health, relationships, or finances. Any of these things can cause a parent to get a sleepless night and to be up worrying, or to, you know, feel like they can't sleep because they have too much on their plate. The other thing, the second thing that I see for parents is disrupted circadian rhythms. Lack of sleep is an epidemic these days, and generations ago it used to not even be an issue. But today, because we're living out of sync with nature, the way that we eat and our light exposure, with the fact that we now light our houses and we have bright lights on at times when the sun is down, and also that we have a lot of electromagnetic frequencies running through our household, this can wreak a havoc on sleep. The third thing that I see for parents as a challenge for their sleep is just the common everyday parenting woes, whether it's a young child who's not sleeping well or a teenager who's out late. You know, parenting is a tough job, and it takes a village, and these days there's not really that much of an extended family as there used to be. You know, we used to live in a tribal society, and there were all sorts of elders and aunties and grandparents around to help us raise our children. And now we do it, if we're lucky, with two parents in the household. And it's really, really tough. And so every parent these days is bound to lose sleep.
Yeah. You know, I'm just reflecting as you're giving me this beautiful explanation. And I did have another guest on my summit, on this particular summit, and her name was Purnima, and she was from India. And she was telling us very much along the lines of what you were saying, that if a parent is off, yeah, and you were suggesting as a parent, like the father working late and he's not sleeping or what have you, that the child, even in their sleep, feels that I want to say energy or lack of energy, which is really what it is, in the parent, which is interesting. And so that's the second time I've heard that. And then you said something else about where was it? Was it life stressors? Well, I'll let it go for now. But I just wanted to say that was something that came across several times during conversation in the summit. So I think that's really interesting that our children, innately tap into the energy of their parents without, you know, and they could be asleep while they're doing it. So very, very interesting.
Absolutely. or not. I, yeah. I experienced that with my own son. I really was not in a good space, and yet I was so committed to co-sleeping with my son. And it wasn't until I stopped co-sleeping with him and we started sleeping in separate rooms that I realized that we were both waking each other up. And part of that was, you know, just the emotional turbulence that I was experiencing at the time. He wasn't, you know, he really needed to be in his own space in order to be able to rest. And they're proving now that we're so interconnected. You know, science is proving more and more the interconnected web of relating that we have to each other physically. And so it really, really is important for all of us to be aware of that and also to be able to take space so that we can really ground and reconnect to our own essence.
Here's a little side question for you, because, you know, and so oftentimes parents have this concern where they have a young child and the young child is continually crawling into bed and, you know, they're with the parent, right? And then the parent will take the child and, you know, I'm talking maybe under the age of five, right? And they'll take the baby or the young child and they put them back in their bed and ultimately they gravitate back towards their bed. And do you have any thoughts on that? I know that that's not something that we had pre-discussed, but do you have any thoughts on good, bad, or is it? Do you see that as a very personal decision that parents make with regards to relationships with their children?
Absolutely, and that's something that I emphasize in my practice as being a holistic sleep consultant, because, and I was going to mention this later when we spoke, but for every family, they need to decide what's right for the family. And that may change. You know, it may be that they start out thinking one thing and then they realize that, wait, this isn't working anymore and we need to do something different, which is certainly what happened in my own experience. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of newer research that indicates that the attachment for young children to their parents is really, really essential to the well-being of the child, which is very, very different than what the going understanding used to be back in the era of, like, Dr. Spock, which is basically spare the rod, spoil the child.
Mm-hmm.
And now we understand that parents basically give children a deep, deep sense of safety that is a biological imperative. Mm. And so it's really, really important to maintain that attachment for the long-term success and well-being of the child. They've done studies that show that adults who have had secure attachment do way, way better in life than children who didn't have that. Mm-hmm. And yet, you still, as a parent, have to take care of yourself. And if for an individual that means, hey, we can't co-sleep and you need to be in your own space, that does not mean that the attachment bond is broken. It's really about how a parent shows up the majority of the time for that child and how sleep is, the environment of sleep is conveyed to the child. That makes the difference, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. So is there I don't want to belabor this point too much, but is there like a cutoff point where a child should be, and I say that loosely, should be, you know, have their own bed and no longer co-sleeping is something that is, you know, encouraged or welcome?
You know, again, it really is individual for every family. For some people, they have their babies in a crib from the very beginning. And for some families, I know families that co-sleep when their kids are 8 and 9 years old. I mean, eventually the child is going to get to a point where they aren't going to want to have their parents in their bed, you know? Mm-hmm. And for each individual child, that's different. You know, some children need more comfort and more security than other children. Some children are very independent from a really early age. So really it's about tuning into the individual child and what they need. Obviously there is a point, and I think that point is different for every child, where it becomes, you know, more of a dependency than a supporting of their feeling of security.
Right. That makes sense. Okay, so let's just move on a little bit. So, you know, what advice would you give to parents who, you know, are feeling exhausted and they feel hopeless, which is, you know, speaking to the very beginning of our conversation?
Ooh, well, I would say two things to a parent who feels exhausted and hopeless. The first thing I would say is, this too shall pass. And the second thing is to put yourself first. I know from experience that when you're exhausted, it's sometimes difficult to see the light at the end of the tunnel and to think that you're ever going to get through the space that you're in. And my understanding is that hopelessness is really a byproduct of exhaustion. When you're sleep deprived, you have a much more difficult time feeling optimistic or having the mental strength to overcome adversity.
Mm-hmm.
So regardless of what else is going on in the family unit, my primary objective for a parent who is burnt out and at their wit's end is to help them to begin to prioritize self-care.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we go to putting yourself first. A parent is the captain of the family ship, and they need to be strong and well enough to take care of their family. And oftentimes, primary caregivers, especially single parents, give until they just collapse. There's so many demands on parents in our modern society, and the common geographic breakup of the extended family is common. It creates a common scenario for parents to be completely exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
If anyone out there is feeling this way, my advice to you is, first and foremost, in this moment, to pause and take a few deep breaths. You know, just the simple act of acknowledging how you're feeling and being with that, being present with that, can do miracles.
Yeah.
The second. Okay.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, I'm interrupting.
Okay.
I apologize.
The second thing that I would say is to come up with ways to give yourself little bits of self-care, whether that's, you know, to rest for 5 minutes or to take a hot shower. There's an app that I love using. It's called the Calm app, and it gives you 10-minute meditations. And so oftentimes, you know, I'll be busy, busy, busy throughout my day, and then I'm like, oh, you know what? I really, really need some downtime, and I'll just put my legs up against the wall and hit this meditation and check out for 10 minutes. And that little bit of a pause makes such a huge difference in my day. So you must nourish yourself so that you have something to give. And if you're depleted, you don't have anything to give, and then you can feel, you know, resentment and depression. And that's not good for anyone, especially not for your children.
Right.
And the third thing that I would suggest is to ask for help. You don't have to do this on your own. You can explore what local resources are in your area to support you. You can reach out to church groups or, you know, other parenting groups in your community, or you can reach out to a therapist or a wellness professional like me who can help you to come up with strategies to help you deal with your stress and manage your life. Because if you're sleep deprived, your brain may not be able to work well enough in order to problem solve on your own.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And, you know, those suggestions is basically, you know, centered around a very common term about recharging your batteries, because you just cannot give what you do not have if there's no energy there, right? So it's almost like a futile effort. You know you want to show up, you want to be there, you want to do, but you just don't have it. So those are really great suggestions. Thank you. So what are some of the common beliefs about sleep that get in the way for parents and families then?
Okay. Oftentimes I will see a parent who has read a whole bunch of books about sleep, and they believe that they need to do something a certain way. They believe that they either need to be really dedicated to doing a cry it out method because that works, or they are on the opposite end of the spectrum and they are completely opposed to a cry it out method. And the reality is that there is no one-size-fits-all approach to sleep. It really is, an individual choice that needs to be made based on all of the different needs that a parent has. And oftentimes parents will judge themselves because they think that they're supposed to be doing something some way, and they think that they're supposed to, have their children doing something specifically according to what this expert or that expert has said, when in reality it's fluid, and really they just need to relax and have a trial and error method where they figure out what's going to work for their family.
You mentioned something called the cry it out method. And for listeners, what is that? What can you explain what that is? Is that literally you sit down and you just bawl your eyes out until you fall asleep?
Right.
Is that what it is?
So cry it out method is also known as the extinction method. And in its most severe form, it basically is where you put a child or an infant never any younger than six months of age, but a 6 month of age child or older into their sleeping environment, and you say goodnight and you say I love you, and then you shut the door and you leave them there to cry themselves to sleep. And the reality is that even though that can sound barbaric, it actually can be for some children's temperaments the most effective strategy, because some children, if you stay in the room, especially if you're still nursing, that can be too stimulating. It can make them stay awake and make, the bedtime a much bigger struggle. So it depends on the temperament of the child, absolutely. And for some children, it's fine. They're like, oh, okay, they cry a little bit the first couple of nights, and then they get it. And they're like, okay, this is it. It's time for sleep. I'm going to bed. And it's easy. For some families and for some children, it's horrible. And it truly is, a form of torture for the entire family, because it's just not what the child needs.
Intuitively, does a mother know that, or she just needs to, give it a chance for, what's the duration before you go, oh, this is just not working?
Yeah, I would say if a child is not settling down after 20 minutes on the first night, then it's not working.
Oh, well, there's a quick indicator right there. Quick evidence indicator.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. So now you mentioned something to me about myths about sleep. Is that the same thing as these common beliefs that you just shared, or are there other myths that you'd like to clarify around sleep?
Sure. Yeah, there are other myths that I would love to clarify. This is fun for me. One related to what we were just talking about is the idea that a sleep-deprived child will always be drowsy. And this is absolutely not the case. Some children become hyper when they're overtired, because often the initial sleep cues of a drowsy child are very, very subtle things like eye rubbing or ear pulling or even getting red in the face. And when a parent misses this, a child can quickly shift to becoming overtired and becoming hyperactive. And then the parents think, oh, they're so energetic, they must have a second wind, they mustn't be tired, but that couldn't be further from the truth, and they really, really need to get them to bed as quickly as possible.
Okay. So, and does the child, are they receptive to that? I guess they would be. Yeah. They just need the guidance to get themselves where they need to go. Yeah. Because they just can't make that decision for themselves. Huh?
Well, when you miss a sleep window for a child, it becomes more challenging to put them down, because then often they do have this burst of energy. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be putting them to sleep. Because if you delay putting them to sleep, then that can actually lead to chronic sleep deprivation in children.
Wow.
So
okay.
Oftentimes, ADHD is like misdiagnosed in, you know, many, many children, because they are so chronically sleep deprived that they cannot focus and they're constantly hyperactive, when in reality they're just sleep deprived.
Oh gosh, that's a big nugget. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's huge. I'm sure there's a lot of parents out there going, does that relate to my kid? You know? But yeah, this is why we do these conversations, so that we can open up some new thought and inspiration and invitation. So, how can parents relate to sleep in a way that'll allow them to better enjoy their parenting?
Mary, can I say one more sleep myth, just because it segues really nicely from the last one, and I think it's really important for parents to know?
Please, I'd love to hear it.
Okay, so there's this idea out there for people of all ages that sleep needs varies. I've heard so many people so many times say, oh, my body only needs 6 hours of sleep, or I do really great sleeping just a couple hours a night and taking cat naps throughout the day. And this is true for less than 1% of the population, and it's related to a specific gene. But only 1% of the population has that. But for the rest of us, the optimal amount of sleep that we need varies very little. So for adults, that's 7.5 to 8.5 hours. For teens, that's 9 to 10 hours. For a 6-year-old, that's 11 to 12 hours. So in my practice, so many times I've seen a parent who has their child sleeping, and they think that they're getting enough sleep and they're way below average. And then they'll say, well, maybe my child just doesn't need that much sleep. And I say, no, you know, it's probably really unlikely. And some of the behavioral changes in a child can be super, super subtle, because they're new. You know, we're just getting to know them. It's not like an adult who, you know, you have a baseline for who they are as a person. When you're getting to know your own child, you don't really know yet what their baseline is. And so a lot of young parents can think that how their child is behaving is normal, but really it's the sleep deprived version of their child.
Oh, okay. And seems like I've heard that before about, you know, high schoolers needing a tremendous amount of sleep, more sleep than they get because of the demands of their time. I didn't realize that young children, and maybe I did, 11 to 12 hours for a 6-year-old is quite a bit of sleep. So that's just a turn in, you know, turn them into sleep, you know, at a really reasonable time, which just goes back to your comment earlier about some parents keeping their children up to see mom or dad come through the door after work later in the night. And yeah, I can understand why that could become problematic. So yeah, there's a lot of challenges to parenting, and the sleep being one of them. And so I'll just revisit that question that I asked you about how can parents relate to sleep in a way that allows them to better enjoy their parenting.
Yeah. Well, you know, sleep is a panacea. It is truly a miracle cure. And I think that parents need to, first of all, relax. You know, none of us are perfect, and we're not going to get it right all the time. And I feel like with all of the parenting books and parenting guidance out there today and all of the social media, there's just a lot of pressure on parents to be perfect. And the reality is that we're not, and we're going to mess up. So the first thing is to just relax. And, you know, if your child is not sleeping well right now, just take it easy and know that you'll get back into a rhythm with them. And also to value sleep and really honor it. It really truly is a crucial biological imperative for all human beings, and it's a beautiful gift that we can give to ourselves and to our family to prioritize sleep.
That's such a great invitation. It's a beautiful invitation. So, the subtitle of the summit is Awaken Your Parenting Strengths, Raise Creative, Confident, and Conscious Kids. And how does this concept apply to family sleep?
Well, if you don't sleep well, it's really, really difficult to raise creative, confident, and conscious kids, because sleep is critically essential for all humans. And in the extreme, without sleep, we will die. So even small amounts of lost sleep have serious negative effects on emotional and physical well-being. And ensuring your family gets adequate, restful sleep is a parenting superpower. So it really behooves parents to awaken their parenting strength by putting sleep on the forefront of the family agenda. Without adequate restful sleep, it becomes much more challenging to raise creative, confident, and conscious kids. All three of these qualities require the executive functions of the brain to be working well. And these are compromised when we're sleep deprived. So it truly is of paramount importance to make sleep a top priority if this is your goal.
Yeah, that's great. So what's different about your approach to sleep from other sleep experts out there?
A lot of sleep experts are polarized. They have the method that they have published about and are famous for, and this keeps them in a box. And as I mentioned, there's two main camps in the family sleep world: proponents of Cry It Out and those who are vehemently opposed. And as I also mentioned, sleep is not a one-size-fits-all approach, and what works for one family will not necessarily work for another. So in my practice, I treat each family individually, and I work with them and their specific situation to create a plan that addresses their specific needs. Also, many people today want a quick, easy fix. And sometimes all that is needed is a simple tweak, and sleep for the family will get right back on track. But more often than not, the challenges of a family that a family is facing with sleep deprivation are complex, and there's no simple and easy solution. So I work holistically with my clients, and that means that I look at all the areas of the family system that can be affecting family health. And this includes sleep hygiene, environment, schedules, emotional well-being, relationships, physical health, exercise, work-life balance, and the relationship that the family has to their spiritual connection.
That's fantastic. So do you have a vision for the future of sleep for families?
I do. My vision is that as a society, we reclaim our birthright to a restful night's sleep, that we demand that sleep be returned to its appropriate place in the fabric of family life, and that families prioritize sleep as a non-negotiable essential for all family members, and that employers and educational policymakers create and implement rules and guidelines that adequately reflect the sleep needs of people of all ages, that elementary schools allow parents to bring children to school late without punishment for making the choice to prioritize their children's sleep, that high schools move start times to reflect the biological impulse of teens to wake up late, that workplaces honor larks and owls equally, creating opportunities for both, and that we all return to a greater sense of harmony with nature and reprioritize sleep, and that we look to sleep as the wonder cure that it is and see adequate sleep as a first line of defense against all sorts of ailments before resorting to drugs.
Wow, and you have a very strong vision for the future of sleep, I can tell. So I'm hoping that you'll post that on your website so people can go revisit that. And a couple of things came to mind. You know, over the summer months when my children were little, we used to travel back east, and now you and I live here on Kauai, so you know, we know they roll up the streets at 9 o'clock at night around here. But back when you go to the East Coast, or even the West Coast for that matter, you know, during the summer months, the days are just that much more expanded, and you know, the energy level until 11:30 at night is incredible, because I guess it's because it's daylight and you know, it's summer and all that. And that was one of the things that my children were most taken by, was how long the days were and the energetic output of the days. So I have that comment to share with you. And then also I wanted to share with you that I have heard more recently that schools are moving towards dialing forward the clock for the beginning of the school day. So part of your vision for sleep in the future may already be in the works for and being, you know, on the table for implementation. So that's a good thing. And I agree with that. I totally agree with that piece. So just a few comments I wanted to share with you.
Yes, I'm so happy. And more schools need to catch on. You know, asking a teenager to wake up at 7 a.m. is like asking an adult to wake up every day at 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. It really, really doesn't work for them.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get that. And actually, they're not even getting up at 7 a.m. Oftentimes, they're getting up at more like 6:30, which is really an exhaustive time. You know, I mean,
right.
Yeah, really. Susie, can you tell us a little bit? I know you have some offer a free gift or two for our listeners. And maybe you can explain to us what your gifts are and how they can access them.
Sure. I am offering as a free gift to everyone who is listening the You Are Bedtime Affirmations that I created. I originally developed this for myself when I was going through a really dark time, and I was looking for a way to reconnect myself with my divinity. And so I created a version of this that I recorded and then would play as I would fall asleep at night. And I did it for, you know, maybe 6 months, where I would play this recording over and over again as a way to remember deeply who I am. And then when my son was an infant, I revisited it because I wanted to instill this awareness of his majesty, you know, his divine majesty in his consciousness, and have him remember that part of himself. And so now I created it for you all, and you can find it on my website by going to susiesank.com, and then there will be a little pop-up, and you can enter your email, and it'll give you access to it. And also for all of you, I want you to know that I offer a free 15-minute consultation. So if you would like to have a little mini session with me, you can go to my website and contact me through my email there, and we can schedule a time for that.
Wonderful. So we're speaking with Susie Sink, who works with parents on sleep solutions. And I invite listeners to check out Susie Sink's website at www.susiesink.com. And her information and her links can be found on your daily summit emails that you're receiving. And I know that you'll find Susie's work insightful and extremely helpful in addressing your parenting concerns around sleep. So, Susie, as we wind down our time together today, what would you like listeners to take away from our conversation?
I would like you all to understand that sleep is a doorway into yourself, and it's one of many. And without being well rested, it's really, really difficult to live an optimal life and to thrive. So if you're having challenges with sleep, please do prioritize sleep as a, you know, as a top need, and take good care of yourself.
Well, that's lovely concluding thoughts, and I want to thank you, Susie, for being with me today for this time with on Inspired Parents Summit 2, and it was truly a pleasure learning about the importance of sleep and how we can pay more attention to its value, and for not only for ourselves but for our children as well. So thank you, Susie. It was truly a pleasure to have you today.
Thank you so much, Mary. It's been an absolute delight to be here with you. I really appreciate the time.
Okay. Be well now.